Welcome to Discover Indie Film. I'm your host, Jeff Howard, and I'm very happy to have James Auchscher with me. Hey, James.
Hello.
Hi, so James is here. We just had a great interview about him and his film, Sorry. Sorry is a horror film that played at Film Invasion Los Angeles in 2022. And I will say right off the top here, Audience Award winner for Best Short Film Horror.
So thank you.
Golf clap for James and your whole team that made the film Sorry so entertaining. But this is not a podcast where we're going to discuss you and your film. This podcast, we're going to get to know about your favorites. You're going to answer the Discover Indie Film 4 questions, which are: name three movies you love, three favorite films, a film that's underrated, a film that's overrated, and a lesser-known film for people to seek out. By the way, in the show notes, there will be a link to James's film, Sorry. You should definitely check it out. It's a great horror film. And links to his social media and stuff. So we're not giving you short shrift, but I figure we can just jump right into your answers.
Let's do it.
Yeah. All right.
Yeah, so when you gave me this prompt, I went through just mentally like my favorites and, you know, all the different like prompt questions you gave me, and I kind of came up with some deep cut answers. So I'm not sure if you've heard of many of these, but hopefully there's some good recommendations in there. Three favorites. I think my favorite movie of all time is probably still Mishima, A Life in Four Chapters. I don't know if you've heard of that one.
I've heard of it, but I honestly haven't seen it.
Yeah, so it's directed by Paul Schrader, also directed like First Reformed. And it's a biopic about the Japanese author Yukio Mishima, who was like a super prolific Japanese author back, I think, throughout like the 60s and 70s. And unfortunately, he kind of gained like a lot of notoriety because in the 70s, he tried to stage a coup, basically, and try to like overthrow the Japanese government and install like the emperor back into power. And that failed. And then after that failed, he committed seppuku and killed himself. And so the movie is just this examination of Mishima from these like three different angles. So the first angle is just like the day of this event where he's going to overthrow the government. And it's like shot in this very like naturalistic, like handheld style. The second one is kind of like his childhood and like all his like backstory leading up to that moment. And that's all in like black and white, kind of like Ozu style, like very like pared down and straightforward. And then the third kind of angle they go from is they do these rough adaptations of three of his works. So I'm pretty sure all of them are like novellas or novels. And those are shot in this like very like colorful, theatrical, like super vibrant style that is just like breathtaking. And so all three of these elements are just kind of like interwoven together all throughout the film. And I think it's just probably like the best like portrait of a man I've ever seen on screen. It's just so thorough and so like interested in like getting into his head and like where he was coming from. It's a beautiful film. I love it. My number two, this is more of like a recent favorite, is a movie called Cure, which is a Japanese movie from 1997, directed by this guy named Kiyoshi Kurosawa, who's just an insanely amazing director. And it's a little like Seven. It's kind of like a serial killer, like detective procedural, but with like a very like kind of strange angle on it, where this detective is investigating these murders where all the victims have been killed by someone like carving an X into their throat. But all the victims were killed by separate people who were just totally normal, have no real like history of violence or anything. They just one day just snapped and started killing people. And so he's trying to piece this together. And what eventually comes out is that there is a man who is basically like hypnotizing them into doing this. And then from there, it just becomes about like capturing this man and figuring out like why he's doing what he's doing. And it goes to some very like dark, scary, like philosophical places, which is, and it's just fantastic. My number three would probably be, this is a bit of a departure from the last two, but it's a movie called Miami Connection. That's from 1987, and it is just like, it's one of those like so bad it's good kind of movies. I don't really like using that label too much, just because I think if, you know, if you like it, it's good. But it's just like, it's about a Taekwondo rock band in, they're not even in Miami, they're in Orlando. And they have to stop this band of motorcycle riding ninjas who are trying to bring cocaine into Orlando from Miami. And so the whole movie is them just like playing music and like doing like Taekwondo fights with these like motorcycle ninjas. And it's just, in our interview, we talked a lot about like making movies with your friends. And I think this has like the total energy of like people who just went out and made a movie, even though like they didn't really have like the skill, quote unquote, to do so. And it's just, you can tell that they're just like trying their best. They're not doing that great, but they're trying their best. And it's just so much fun. It's like a sugar high of a movie. And I just, anytime I want to get inspired about like filmmaking or just going out and making something, I watch Miami Connection.
And that's perfect, by the way, because there's, it's very intentional that the question is name three favorite films. It's not like name what you consider the best three films ever made or the, you know, the highest artistic merit. It's favorite. It's what you really enjoy. And I got to admit, your list is great. And I've heard a lot about Mishima. And I think Paul Schrader might, in a lot of ways, is like the ultimate filmmaker's filmmaker.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I read a little bit of his book on Transcendental Style, where he like analyzes like Ozu and Bresson and stuff. And yeah, he thinks about things in like a very interesting way. And his approach to Mishima is just incredible. And it has this like beautiful Philip Glass score that is like my favorite movie score of all time.
I have, and say I mean, this is like podcast number 390 or whatever. So like, I can't remember how many, yeah, who said it, but someone else had it on their list and they mentioned the Philip Glass score. Yeah. Cause that's,
oh yeah. I mean, the movie doesn't work without that score. It just adds so much to the film.
Excellent. And Cure sounds great. And I think I've heard of it. So, cause yeah, that's a very memorable thing, what you described.
Yeah. The X's. Yeah.
The X's and the hypnotizing.
Yeah. That's like an interesting one. Cause I watched it for the first time and I didn't really like it that much. Cause the way it's filmed, it's very like stripped back, like so many like long takes that are the camera, they'll just like plant the camera somewhere. And it'll like move very like subtly during these like 10-minute long takes. And so it has this very like detached feeling that makes it a little hard to like get into at first. But just like the use of sound design and the editing is just like so like fascinating to me. It kind of like changed my like perspective on like what you could do with film a little bit when I like started rewatching it and like really understanding what it was doing. Yeah, it's a movie that kind of like hypnotizes you in like a very like meta kind of way. So I love it.
I mean, the premise alone has me thinking of all kinds of analogies, but I'll shut up because I should not discuss a film I haven't seen. So question number two,
yes,
is a film you consider underrated?
Ooh, what did I? Oh yeah. I went with a movie called Hour of the Wolf for this one. It's an Ingmar Bergman movie. I forget the year. It's, yeah, I feel like it's a bit underrated because it's his horror film. And so I feel like a lot of Bergman fans might tend to skip over it just because it's like one of his quote unquote, like lesser, like less known works. And then horror fans might skip over it because it's like a Bergman movie. But I really think both camps would like really get a lot out of it. It's very like strange and psychological and nightmarish. It's about this, I believe he's a painter who goes with his wife to this kind of like isolated island, just to like focus on his work. And then he meets this like mysterious group of like rich people living in like a castle nearby. And they may or may not be like demons who have like manifested from like his psyche. And so it's like, it's just like a very personal like film about like Ingmar Bergman, like confronting like his own demons and his own like anxieties, but just with all these like crazy, like surreal horror elements and this like really great, like quiet atmosphere of just menace. It's really fantastic.
Sounds fantastic. I'm going to ask a silly question, which is, you think a high school kid would enjoy it, or is it going to be too esoteric?
It might be a little too esoteric.
And subtitled, too. That's a tough sell for a kid.
It's in Swedish, yeah. Honestly, I watched it in high school, and that honestly is the movie that got me into, like, art house films and foreign films in a way. But I was also, like, a huge horror fan coming off of that, so I was like, oh, this is, like, a different kind of take on, like, a horror film. So that was, like, what really appealed to me, so maybe. I mean, I know she's a horror fan, so maybe at some point.
And the funny thing is horror, like, you don't have to understand all the dialogue anyway to be affected by horror, right?
Yeah, exactly. I
mean, horror, if there's any genre that dialogue is less important.
Yeah. And it's funny because it's a Bergman movie, so there are all these, like, long monologues about, like, existential angst and all that kind of stuff. But on top of that, there's also just, like, really spooky imagery, too. So it's just best of both worlds.
I mean, you clearly appreciate the masters.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Well, question three will be fun. A film that's overrated.
Yeah. I kind of struggled with this one a little bit. The one I went with is, I kind of watched it recently and I was a little disappointed with how it held up. The original Night of the Living Dead. I'm just not. You made a face. Are you?
No. I'm not a huge devotee of it.
Okay.
But I actually made the face because I'm mentioning her too much, but you're a horror director and yeah. I got a horror kid in the house. I keep saying, you know, we really ought to watch Night of the Living Dead. Like,
yeah.
Like you've seen so much zombie shit. We should go back and watch. I made her watch The Exorcist because we watched so many demonic possession films from, you know, all the Insidious Conjuring stuff.
Right.
I'm like, okay, let's go back and watch like the film that all these filmmakers are clearly copying from.
Right.
And she appreciated it. She actually really got into The Exorcist.
Oh, good.
So I was like, well, now we got to go back and watch the original zombie shit.
Yeah.
And maybe it's just not there.
Yeah. No, I really appreciate like what it was doing for the time. And I know there's been a lot of like intellectual kind of like analysis of it since that is like really like brought out like the social themes in it. And I really appreciate that. But yeah, I mean, we talked about with horror, like, you got to go for, like, the gut level, like, instinct with it, and I just didn't feel it with that. Like, I wasn't really into the drama inside the farmhouse. I thought it was a little repetitive, personally. There's some really great scenes. I love the opening. I love the spade scene. The ending is brutal, but, yeah, just overall, I wasn't taken by it.
It's funny, I haven't revisited it for about 40 years.
Yeah, I hadn't seen it since I was like 8 or something. And
seeing it at 8.
Even then, I thought it was a little like, eh.
You're like, eh. Well, honestly, yeah, it is sobering how things don't hold up. Like,
yeah,
things that you just like hold up as like, I love this film. And then people, and you recommend it. And then people are like, you should watch that again. When was the last time you saw it? And I'm like, the 80s. And they're like, don't recommend it till you watch it again.
Right.
And I'm like, how much time do you think I have?
I know. Yeah. No. And it sucks. Cause I do really like films from that period too. Like, Carnival of Souls. Have you seen that one?
I think so. A long time ago.
Yeah. I watched that one again recently too. And I thought it just blew Night of the Living Dead out of the water. I mean, they're clearly different movies, but in terms of like black and white ghoulish movies, like Carnival of Souls, I thought was very scary and upsetting, personally.
Good.
Yeah.
Oh, maybe I should. Okay. If I want to show the kid a black and white horror film, it'll be that one. All right.
Definitely.
Last question.
Yes.
And you kind of already covered it in spades with Miami Connection, but a lesser known film that people should seek out.
Yeah. I decided to go with another pick by Kiyoshi Kurosawa. I know he's kind of known as like the lesser Kurosawa, but I just love his filmography so much. It's a movie called Tokyo Sonata, which is interesting because he really made a name for himself doing these horror movies like Cure and Pulse and other films like that. And I think it was like in the early 2000s, he made this family drama, which is just about this like family in Tokyo, and the father gets laid off, but he doesn't want to like tell his family about it. So every day he like pretends to like go to work. And the wife catches on to it, but she doesn't want to embarrass him, so she doesn't say anything. And the son really wants to become like a piano player, and the dad is like very opposed to that because it's not like the traditional like path. And it's just this like really beautiful, touching family drama about how all these characters kind of like conflict with each other. And the last 30 minutes of the movie is just very wild. It's it goes in a direction that like you're completely not expecting at all, and it's a little like unclear like what the film is doing for a bit, and then the ending is just fantastic. It's like one of the only scenes in a movie that is like guaranteed to like make me cry anytime I see it. Like it just goes to such like a moving and like profound scene. It's really fantastic, and I think a lot of people would really enjoy it if they saw it.
Excellent. Excellent. I do really, I appreciate films. I know sometimes it's a hard sell for people to have a big tone shift or a big,
yeah,
a plot point shift where all of a sudden like, wow, things are totally different now, but people handled it with Parasite. Like people, like, yeah, like I think people are handling it better now.
Yeah, I totally think they are. Or even Barbarian. Did you ever see that?
Not yet. Cause I don't see any movies.
That's a good one to see though, because halfway through it changes.
Oh, I really want to see it. I really want to see it. Admittedly, the only two films I saw in the theaters in 2022 was Nope and the Spider-Man with all three Spider-Men in it.
Yeah, was that 2022?
I think so.
Yeah,
wow. That was the first film. That was the first film we saw post COVID.
Oh, gotcha.
And of course, I had to go because.
Oh, Andrew Garfield.
Too many hot dudes in that film not to go.
Oh, yeah.
Smoke show. And then I forced the kid to see Nope. I'm like, look, I've made you watch Get Out and Us. Now you're going to finally see one in the theater now that you're old enough.
Nice. Did you guys like Nope?
Yeah. Yeah, we liked it a lot. Although I'm looking forward to watching it again.
Yeah, me too. Yeah. It's I think it's kind of rare for a movie to kind of like get me. But the digestion scene in that really got me.
It gets you.
Yeah.
Amusingly, my reason is we saw it at a local theater that's letting their equipment go. And so the picture was a little off. And that gets me. So I'm looking forward to watching it again, really. I love it. I thought it was good.
Yeah, I liked it too.
Although it might be my least favorite of the Jordan Peele trilogy for now.
Oh, yeah? Did you like Us more?
I love Us, actually. That's my number one. I know Get Out should be number one.
Yeah.
I can't get enough of Us.
Yeah, I really wanted to love Us because I love that concept so much. But I don't know what it was. It might have just been like the humor in it just didn't totally gel with me. But
And it is weird. It is. But that's why I love it so much. I sit there and I know the kid's not going to appreciate it like I do, but I'm watching it and I'm going, I cannot believe he sold a Hollywood studio on this.
Oh, yeah.
Like, you know
that's
what I mean?
That's the best part.
He walked into rooms and said, I'm going to make a film where everyone has a counterpart twin who lives underground and talks funny. And they said, here's some money. I guess Get Out made that much money that he could do anything. But no one can ever do anything they want, you know? So I don't know. But also, I just love it. I find it so, so good.
Yeah. No, I love that he's just like doing what he wants. And he totally has like a vision too. I'll watch anything he makes, honestly.
I'm with you. And we've re-binged Key and Peele like twice, I think, during COVID. Like, once in 2019 and once in 2021. Oh, not 2019. 2020 and 2022 then. Yeah, but, and it's, you just realize like a good third of that show is horror.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I remember a couple segments like that. Yeah. I haven't seen it in forever. But
yeah. When you go back to it, you realize horror is everywhere in it because it's often about how being black in America is a horror movie on its own.
Oh, yeah.
Which I think a lot of great creatives are handling that theme now. I think Donald Glover's great about that too, but it's like constantly watching it going, of course this guy made Get Out, of course this guy made Us. Yeah. It's wild. It's very wild.
Yeah, no, I love the trend of like comedians just turning around and directing these crazy horror movies, like Zach Kreger with Barbarian too.
It's not too well. And you like comedy and horror, but yeah, it is. I'm just going to say the thing that offends a certain percentage of people, which is people who succeed at comedy have such amazing instincts at what an audience needs, right?
Oh, totally.
So a comedian can turn around and do amazing drama or amazing horror, amazing anything. And then when a dramatic person tries to do comedy or something, they just suck. Like it's...
Yeah.
Very few serious people are ever funny or scary. Yeah. Like, come on.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. More power to Tom Cruise. We need Tom Cruise on the planet, I guess. Dude's not funny. Dude can never be funny. You cannot.
Nope.
You cannot. You know, the greatest, I don't know who the best comedy writer alive is, but the Monty Python guys could not have used him in a funny way. And I think they might have been the best comedy writers who ever lived. Maybe. I don't know.
Maybe. Most legendary, maybe.
Had to be someone British.
Yeah. Surprisingly, because you'd think they'd be more like stuffy and intellectual, but no.
But that's why, right? They have such a structure to fight against. That's
oh,
why.
Oh, yeah.
That's why.
That's a good observation.
Yeah, yeah. That's why. Well, anyhow, I'll stop blabbing on. Anything you want to mention at the end here?
No, please just go watch those movies. They're great.
Go watch them. Watch the movies that James recommended. And, of course, watch his film, Sorry. There's a clickable link to it in the show notes. And appreciate that. And then, hey, after you see the film and enjoy it, then you should go check out his Instagram. That'll be a clickable link. And I bet if people go back far enough, they'll see, like, Sorry shots on there and stuff.
Yeah, some fun BTS photos and stuff.
Some slimy stuff.
Some, yeah, a little bit of slimy stuff.
A little bit of slime.
Whatever Instagram will allow.
Excellent. All right. Well, James, thank you so much. I will do the closing spiel again, although it's again for you. For it to be again for the people listening, that means they listen to your interview too, which is very cool. Thank you for listening to the interview and then the four questions. So anyhow, you're listening to the Discover Indie Film podcast. So if you want to learn more about this podcast or the TV series it gave birth to, go to discoverindiefilm.com. On social media, it's always at DIFWINS. And that TV show I mentioned, it's on Amazon Prime Video in the US and UK. So just go to Amazon Prime Video, hopefully on a big-ass TV. I hate the idea of people watching cinema on their phones. Although the 15-year-old I've mentioned too many times with Here with James, I've actually seen her like sitting in that room in front of the TV watching Netflix on her phone. And I'm like, well, why aren't you watching the TV? And she's like, I prefer my phone. And I'm like, the world is over. But anyway, it's not over. The young generation is great. So anyway, that's all I got to say about the... Oh, and watch the TV series, Support Indie Film. It's all self-finance indie films, stuff handpicked from the festival circuit. I believe I should have mentioned... Yeah, I mentioned this. Sorry, James's film won the audience award at the film festival called Film Invasion Los Angeles last year. So if you want to learn more about that festival, just go to filminvasionla.com and it's at filminvasionla on social media. It has that's festivals every June. Every November, we have the Sherman Oaks Film Festival. You can learn more at shermanoaksff.com and it's at shermanoaksff on social media. And I will quickly add, there's a smart TV app, which is the same thing as a streaming service called TVHI. You can learn more if you go to watchtvhi.com. It's all kick-ass indie stuff, although there might be some non-indie stuff soon because I'll tell James after we stop recording what I'm going to do. But anyhow, and then only James knows. I like that.
You get too.
Right? Yeah, you deserve something for coming over here and spending a couple hours talking to somebody about your work. So anyhow, I mentioned everything. And that Watch TV High thing is watchtvhigh.com and it's at Watch TV High on all the social medias. So thank you, James.
My pleasure.
And thank you, everyone, for listening.